Hello, hello, hello.
You are listening to and watching the STD Project's STD podcast. My name is Janelle Marie Pierce. I'm the executive director of the STDproject.com, the spokesperson for PositiveSingles.com, and the founder of the Herpes Activist Network, which is called HANDS, and that stands for Herpes Activist Networking to Dismantle Stigma. Welcome to today's podcast. This podcast is being brought to you by Anti-Aging Systems at www.antiaging-systems.com. They're a distributor of BHT. For those of you who don't know what BHT is a potent antioxidant, and it's a common food preservative that's also known to treat viruses, including herpes. Again, you can find them at www.antiaging-systems.com. So today's podcast is all about the difference between HSV-1 and HSV-2, or oral herpes versus genital herpes. So the very cut and dry answer to, is there a difference between HSV-1 and HSV-2, oral herpes versus genital herpes? Oral herpes is sometimes called cold sores too, so cold sores versus genital herpes. And the answer is no, there is no difference. Herpes is herpes is herpes. Before everybody gets all up in arms and their undies in a bundle, technically, there are some differences between the two types, but we're going to work through that and break it down. Overall, though, it's important to know that there aren't a lot of differences, and for the regular general public, people who aren't clinicians or doing work in a laboratory, there are not any noticeable or visible differences. So let's work backward in terms of this information, why there is some difference in perception when it comes to talking about oral herpes versus genital herpes, or HSV-1, which is herpes simplex virus type 1 versus herpes simplex virus type 2. So HSV-1 and HSV-2 are all part of the human herpes viruses. They're in the family of 9 different viruses. In the family of human herpes viruses, that also includes things like shingles, mono, the chicken pox, those are all herpes viruses. The herpes simplex viruses are 2 specific types. We didn't know, though, that there were even 2 specific types until the late 60s. Before that, herpes was just diagnosed as herpes. If you had it on your head, somewhere orally, mouth, nose, eyes, that was called herpes. If you had it genitally, whether it was front or back, anywhere genitally below the waist, it was called herpes. Your doctor diagnosed you by looking at it and said, yep, that's herpes. The reason why is because it all looks very similar. How it actually manifests on the body, if you get active outbreaks at all, which very few people do, simplex type 1 or 2, and the ones who do, it all looks very similar. That said, once we were able to type specify the specific viruses, then we were able to look into what the risk was in terms of transmission, how often one type was in one location versus the other. So since then, since the 60s, it's been commonly thought of that oral herpes is HSV-1 and genital herpes is HSV-2. However, now we know that both types can be in both locations. Even so, HSV-1 is more commonly oral, and HSV-2 is more commonly genital, but that's quickly changing, and that's because of oral sex. So there's risk involved in every activity and everything we do, but we have not been taught, and it's not widely communicated, that a cold sore, something that people have on their mouths or on their faces from a young, early age, can be transmitted to the genitals. So we're seeing a huge increase in genital HSV-1 infections, and then we still see HSV-2 orally as well. And that's for the same reason, oral sex. Yay, high five for oral sex, right? We're going to take a break from this message for our sponsor. Our sponsor today is Anti-Aging Systems. Anti-Aging Systems distributes BHT. BHT is a potent antioxidant. It's a common food preservative, and it's also known to treat viruses, including herpes. It's believed to work against the virus by potentially damaging the protective layer of the viral cell, and in turn, it makes the virus vulnerable to the immune system, which may result in preventing the virus from multiplying and causing outbreaks, whether it's HSV-1 or HSV-2. How great is that? If you want to give BHT a try, go to www.antiaging-systems.com. Use STD as your coupon code to get 10% off. So back to HSV1 versus HSV2, or oral versus genital. So we know now that HSV1 and HSV2 can be both orally and genitally, although a lot of times people perceive one as the good herpes and one as the bad herpes, and that's again because of stigma. It's social perception, it's a misconception, and somewhat of a misnomer, because now we're seeing, especially if we look at like the UK, the UK has more infections of HSV1 genitally now than they do of HSV2. And again, it's because of the lack of information surrounding risk and protection and ways to reduce risk when it comes to oral sex. A lot of people feel like they're being safer when they're engaging and enjoying, hopefully enjoying, oral sex. However, there's still risk involved. There's risk in everything we do, right? As soon as we step out the door of our houses, even if we stayed in our houses all day long, there's some risk involved in that. So there's risk in everything we do, and we just hope that there's an equal and opposite reward, but we're still going to engage in that risk because we want that reward. And then sometimes things happen that are not necessarily ideal, but they're a part of our human experience. And that is exactly what HSV1 and HSV2 are, a part of our human experience. Again, nobody wants a new infection. I don't want a cold or the flu. Anything new, any kind of malady or ailment or something that potentially might compromise my immune system or just be uncomfortable or not fun. And actually, if you get active outbreaks like I do, I've had herpes HSV2 genitally since I was 16, and I do get active outbreaks, and they're not ideal, they're not enjoyable or delightful, but they're also not awful. They're not the end of the world, and I don't get them very often. They're manageable. So I did mention at the very beginning of this podcast and or video, so if you're watching via video, you're getting a really short and cut version. If you're listening via podcast, you get the long explanations and less editing. So if you're interested in a little bit further of a description, then hop on over to anywhere you can listen to a podcast, iHeartRadio, Spotify, iTunes, all the podcast places. Or if you want to see a visual and listen and watch while you're engaging, then YouTube is your best bet. At the beginning of the podcast, though, I mentioned that even though they are kind of the same, or at least like in terms of how they manifest, oftentimes very similar in how they're treated, they can be both locations, there are some differences. The differences are that DNA-wise, they share DNA, but then they also have a lot of different DNA. And that comes into play when we're talking about risk. So when you have herpes, anyone who has herpes, which the vast majority of people do, cheers, when you have herpes, you can, even if you don't have active outbreaks, so if you never notice any signs or symptoms, you are still a carrier, you're still someone who has the infection. A lot of times that gets communicated that you have been exposed to the virus, and I think that that can be misleading, and I think that we have to be very careful as educators and when we're talking about herpes in general to not make it sound like there is not a risk involved if you don't have active outbreaks. And the reason I'm saying that is because if you test positive for HSV1 or 2 on a blood test, they won't tell you where it's located because there's no way to determine that, which is also one of the many reasons why blood tests are actually recommended right now by most clinicians or the CDC. However, if you do get a blood test and it comes back as you're positive for HSV1 or 2, it could be in either location, and then you may never actually get an active outbreak. So a lot of folks will say, well, that means you've been exposed to the virus. But if you test positive, yes, you've been exposed to the virus, but that means you're also carrying it, and that means you still can have shedding, viral shedding. And viral shedding happens a small percentage of the time every month, and there's no way to tell when you're virally shedding. There's no way to know or test to know when you're virally shedding. That said, even if you have herpes, whichever strain you have, you're still virally shedding a very small percentage of the time. So let's put it into actual practical numbers. So if you have HSV2 genitally, which was more thought of as the common location for HSV2, but now we know that it can be in both locations, and the infection rates in both locations for both types are increasing. If you have HSV2 genitally, at max you will shed around 10% per month. So out of 30 days in the month, that means about 3 days per month. So you may not have a blister, any sort of uncomfortable sign, symptom. You might not have a clue that you actually have the infection, but 3 days out of the month, you're shedding the virus, and then you can transmit it to other folks. Same happens with HSV1. So if you have HSV1 orally, which is more of the traditional location for HSV-1 to be, you are shedding around that percentage, that same 10% at max. Now, everyone's bodies and immune systems are different. That's the only caveat, is we don't know how your immune system is going to interact, how the antibodies are going to come into play. So what your actual percentage is, it may be a little bit lower than that. It may be the same amount. It may be the maximum. Who knows? So the maximum is right about 10% per month if you have HSV-1 orally or HSV-2 genitally. However, if you have them in opposite locations, so you have HSV-1 in a genital location, you are virally shedding about half as often. Same applies for if you have HSV-2 orally, you're virally shedding about half as often, so 1 or maybe 1.5 days per month. It's still very low when you compare it to other infections, right? So everybody knows someone who's had a cold or the flu, and many colds and flus. Those are highly susceptible, highly transmittable infections. Even though so many people, the vast majority of people, have some form of herpes, there are still fewer people who have herpes than have had a cold or the flu. And that's because it doesn't just jump onto you. You can't just contract it via touching someone, not even necessarily via kissing someone. There has to be a presence of the virus, so either virally shedding or an active outbreak, and then it has to have an entry point into your system. So skin is a natural barrier. However, if you are interacting with areas of your skin that have mucous membranes allow an entry point into the system. And mucous membranes are permeable tissue meant to trap unwanted pathogens. But when herpes is considered, it cannot kill and trap it and get rid of it. So that's where it enters in the system. It traps it, and then now it has an entry point into your system. So when we're talking about mucous membranes, they're located in the eyes, nose, mouth, ears, the urethra, the vagina, vulva, and the anus as well. So all of those locations are way more susceptible, and that's why so many people have oral and genital herpes. But when it comes down to whether herpes is good or bad, that's all about perception and society and stigma. It all plays into a moral idea of how it was contracted, for one, and not only that, but it's a way of shaming people about something that is almost inevitable. Like, again, nobody wants herpes, nobody wants an infection, any kind, nobody wants a cold or the flu, but some of these things just happen because they're part of our human experience. They're part of the risk that's involved in being intimate, being sexually intimate with someone else's body. So that's all to say that, yes, there actually are differences between the two infections. There's DNA differences. There's a little bit difference in risk and transmittability. All of that actually does have some relevance. But when you're just talking about herpes, each strain can be in each location. When they actually come out as an outbreak, they manifest very similarly. And overall, folks didn't actually care whether it was type 1 or type 2 until we figured out that we could actually specify type specific in a test. Then we started designating that one must be better than the other, and we started putting our moral barometer and applying it to these infections. And these infections just simply don't care. It's all about which area of the body they were exposed to, whether or not there was viral shedding happening, and then what your immune system is doing as a result. So there are so many people who have HSV-1 or HSV-2 and have no idea because they never get signs or symptoms. They don't have active outbreaks like I do, and they just don't know because testing isn't a regular thing. In short, whether you have HSV-1 or HSV-2, oral or genital, there's nothing wrong with you, dirty, bad, or otherwise. There is no good, bad depiction. That's just an idea that has been imposed upon folks in order to make you feel bad about something that is almost irrelevant and not a big issue in the long run and in the scheme of things. Now, I know you're saying, like, okay, that's so much easier said than done because you have herpes, and of course you want everyone to think that, but it's about education, it's about awareness. The majority of people have herpes. And it's not to say that I wouldn't get rid of it if I could, but I wouldn't get rid of it if there was risk involved. So it's a risk-reward. What are the consequences? What's the information that I know about it? How does it actually make me feel? What's the reality of living with HSV-2 genitally versus there are tons of advocates and tons of people talking about HSV-1 genitally or HSV-1 or 2 orally as well. And I think the big takeaway is that you can absolutely contract herpes from oral sex. That isn't a safe activity. There's risk in all of it when you're engaging in partnered activities. You're sharing your body intimately with someone else, and so there's going to be some risk. misconceptions and stigma will have you believe that contracting one type of herpes, whether you contracted that when you were little versus contracting it when you're an adult, is somehow better than the other. But ultimately, there really is not a big difference between the two. They're basically the same thing. They are all herpes. And earlier, before the 60s, we just called it that. At the end of the day, it's up to you to decide how you want to feel about it with additional knowledge, additional resources, backing and support, and knowing and understanding risk and transmission and rates and stuff like that. It's all good and helpful information, and then you can go forward and feel empowered and excited about your decisions. If you like this podcast, if you like this video, give us a thumbs up, subscribe to our channel, renew your podcast subscription so that you get updates every time we post a new podcast. Leave us a comment. Let us know if we've helped, what you think about what we have to say. Check out thestdproject.com. Listen in next time as we talk about all things STIs, STDs, living with STIs and STDs, and working on dispelling and eradicating stigma. Until then, this podcast is brought to you by Anti-Aging Systems at www.antiaging-systems.com. They're a distributor of BHT. For those of you who don't know what BHT is a potent antioxidant, and it's a common food preservative that's also known to treat viruses, including herpes. Again, you can find them at www.antiaging-systems.com.